No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I'm joined by my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, and together we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. We have just celebrated our 237th birthday, and today we're going to discuss our democracy, what's new in the struggle for equality in Washington, D.C., what's happening around the country, and what you think about democracy and where it's going, and what the people are doing out there to help. But before we get started, let me introduce my co-host, Kathleen Gomez. Hi, Kathleen, and as always, thanks for helping get the conversation started.
Hey, Senator Brown, how you doing?
Good.
How was your 4th of July?
Good. I ate a lot of watermelon and hot dogs. So well,
you're happy, huh?
Yes.
Well, before we go any further, I wanted to say a few words about the 19 brave firefighters who lost their lives a week ago while trying to contain a wildfire north of Phoenix, you know, in the Prescott area. You know, they were young men who gave their lives protecting their neighbors' lives and property. And, you know, our sympathies go out to the families of these heroes and to the Prescott Fire Department, who has sacrificed so much to keep us safe. And we ask our listeners to keep them in their prayers and their families in their prayers, and, you know, to wish them the best. You know, in all of the catastrophes that kind of happened, like 9/11, you know, it was the firefighters and the first responders who always are at, you know, the first on the scene and who always end up taking the brunt of what happens. Like, when I was living in New York City, our ladder number 11, we lost, I think it was 12 of our firefighters. You know, these were guys that grew up with my kids, and they, you know, would play with them. So I'm always amazed how firefighters and first responders, you know, sacrifice so much. And they're, you know, they're our brothers next door. They're our, you know, our neighbor. It's amazing what they do.
Absolutely. I used to live next to a fire department, and I found those people to be among the bravest people I've ever met. So
yes,
our sympathies go out to their families, and please keep them in your prayers.
So we're going to start our show tonight with a special guest. It's Don Simonis. He's a member of the West Texas Millionaires. I worked with him on the 4th of July. We put on a benefit, a concert in Bisbee, to draw attention to the devastation that happened in West Texas. You know, when the fertilizer plant blew up, it killed 50 people. I think it injured about 100 or more and took out 37 blocks of West Texas. So welcome, Dan, and thanks for being on our show.
Hello, hello.
Hey, how are you, Dan?
Oh, well, thanks for allowing me on the show, and hello to Kathleen also.
Well, yes, thanks for helping your neighbors. You know, we're really impressed by people like you, Dan, that figure out their own way to reach out and help others. So thanks for being on the show.
Oh, thank you. You know, we just, I have a band called the West Texas Millionaires. And after that tragedy happened in West Texas, I started getting a lot of traffic to my website, which I didn't deserve. So I called West Texas just to see what was really happening there, and I found out that they were very short on funds, that everything had been, you know, the tragedy had happened, and they did get support, but then shortly after that, the Oklahoma tragedy happened with the tornadoes, and it seems like there's always a new one coming. So I thought, well, maybe we could do a little something just to let that town know that there are people out here that still care about them, another small town. So on the 4th of July, we thought this is the perfect time. We'll celebrate the 4th. by showing one small town in Texas that one small town in Arizona is there for them. So we held this concert, and we did a live stream. So Kathleen was instrumental in setting this up in West Texas, but the good people of West were actually gathered together watching the show that the people in Bisbee were giving for them and raising money.
Well, before, I'm sure Kathleen has some questions for you, but before we go any further, I want to tell you again that I think it's great because this is really what we need to do. We need to reach out and help each other. And I've also been to Bisbee, Arizona. You live in an absolutely beautiful town. It's just it's a wonderful place with the nicest people. So anybody that hasn't been to Bisbee, Arizona, should go and listen to the West Texas Millionaires because it's
thank you,
it's
Senator.
It's worth the trip down there. It's really pretty.
It is. It is.
It's very, very unique, and you know, it was. I was really impressed when Dan asked. You know, I had worked with him on another benefit, and so he had this idea, and we just thought, well, let's see if we could pull it off, and we did. It was really kind of neat to be able to see them watching us. And at one part, they brought on one of their first responders who had, Dan, do you remember? I mean, he had gotten pretty injured, didn't he, through the explosion?
Oh, yeah. He was the only last surviving person from his team, I believe. He was behind one of the fire engines when the explosion happened.
Right.
So I believe all of his team members were killed.
Right, and he was going to go through a lot of therapy. It was a long haul for him, but they had him there. And they were so appreciative because, you know, it is really hard because the minute you turn around, you think, okay, you know, we're going to help this. But then there's another disaster, and then, you know, like the 19 firefighters who died in Arizona, and then, you know, you had the plane crash in San Francisco. So, you know, one of the things we're trying to figure out is, even though there's another catastrophe, doesn't mean that those people don't need, if not sometimes more help, you know, after time has gone by. So we were thinking that this would just be a way to be able to keep people's awareness that, you know, even though that happened, and I guess it was about 3 months ago, they still, I mean, their entire town was really kind of destroyed, and they're not going to get that much more help from the government, and so what do people do but have to help each other? And I think, you know, Michael, you were talking about how Americans are what? You had a great statistic.
Well, you know what? I remember that when I was in college, we studied how much governments give of their GNP to help other countries in foreign aid. And the United States gives a lot of foreign aid, but they're not at the top of the list. But the thing that I really remember is that Americans as individuals give more by far than any country in the world. I mean, it's just amazing.
Yeah.
We give like 10 times as much as the next country. We really are giving people. And, you know, the kind of thing that Dan did, you know, that's really what most of it is. It's mostly local people giving to other people in need. And no matter what the idea is, I always think it's great when people get involved. In fact, today on the internet, I read that a woman named Patricia Salon was running for Miss British Columbia, and she helped raise money for cancer research. And after she was crowned, she sat on stage and cut her hair off and donated it to one of those places that makes wigs for cancer victims because she wanted to demonstrate somehow for people how important it is to give. So even if it's just cutting your hair, you know, it's an important thing, I think, to reach out to people.
I think you're right, Senator. I was thinking, like, you know, what can we actually help? We're not going to raise enough money in our little town to make that big of a difference. And, of course, it's good to let them know that somebody's thinking about them. But then I thought, if you were to get every little town in America, if you had someone throwing a concert in every little town for every disaster that happened, it would make a difference.
Dan, something that we have to talk about in the future is maybe we should do a concert. Maybe this show should do a concert or a couple of concerts where we bring in people from around the country, different groups. You know, I have a lot of friends that are musicians in Washington, D.C., because I discovered many years ago that musicians are the coolest people on the planet. So I've made friends with a lot of them over the years. But maybe we can get some people from Washington, some people from Douglas, some people from other places, and stream a couple of live concerts to help, because I think that's a good idea.
I love it. Count me in.
All right, good.
Count me in, and I'll help you organize it.
All right, great.
And he's a good organizer too. And one of the things, I mean, you were pretty happy with the way it went, right, Dan? And I mean,
oh yeah, absolutely. For the people that were in the audience, I think on both ends, people, you know, on our end at the concert and people in West, the feeling I got overall was that suddenly we had a sister city. I felt that at least during the concert, you know.
Yeah, and you know, Texas people just are they're so nice, and they have such a genuine, I don't know what it is, it's like just, it kind of comes out this genuine niceness, and they were so appreciative that I think that we were even still remembering that they had this tragedy, and that we were still around 3 months later to talk about how to help them. And I know I was telling Michael and Dan, why don't you talk to the audience about your other idea on how you can continue to help West Texas.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's a good point. A couple years back, I'd recorded a song called West Texas Town. And it talks a lot about just life in a small town and the beauty of it and how people do care about each other. And when this thing happened, it kind of struck a nerve with me. And I thought, well, one small thing I can do, something like when the beauty queen cut her hair off, is I thought, I'll do this where anyone that downloads that song in the future from now on, the monies from that will just go directly to West until they're okay, which could probably be a long time.
But yeah.
Any monies generated from the downloading of West Texas Town on the internet will go straight there.
Well, that's a great idea, and I've heard the song. It's a lovely song, and I encourage people to do exactly that because it's a win-win for you. You get some good music, and you help some people that need help. So I encourage everybody to go on the internet and download that song, West Texas Town, by the West Texas Millionaires. It's like I said, I've listened to it. It's a lovely song, and you'll not only do something good for the people of West Texas, but you'll get some music you can enjoy too. I have a question for you, Dan.
Sure.
You know, part of our show, the idea of our show is to try to connect people. And so I found it really interesting that a group of folks from a small town in Arizona were reaching out to the people in a small town in Texas. Did you choose to help West Texas because they're like you are, that you could relate to the tragedy they were going to, because people that live in small towns share a lot in common?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I come from a very small town originally, and, you know, I felt a lot of affinity for this place once that happened with the name of our band. And you know, it's just, I think whether if you're a senator or if you're a musician or, you know, any walk of life, sometimes you have an opportunity or you have a drive inside you that you find an opportunity for where you can make the world a better place. And I don't think every musician or every senator is like that, but I think a lot of people who get into that position are, and you need these kinds of things to fulfill your own quest, let's say.
Well, that's absolutely true. And let me just tell you that, again, you know, I wasn't just blowing sunshine up your skirt. I do have a lot of friends that are musicians. And I find out, because music is such a universally unifying force, and because these people are in, I never met a musician that was in it for the money. You know, they're
That's
in
true.
It because they love music. So
well, there's not a lot of money it goes pretty thin at times. It can.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, absolutely. So they, you know, it seems to me that they all recognize a higher calling to begin with, generally through their music. So I find them to be very giving people. And
thank you, Senator. I think, you know, we all do feel that, and I believe that's true for a lot of senators also.
The ones that aren't stealing your money or
yes, I could pinpoint just you, if, you know, but I thought I should be a little more fair than that.
So. All right. No, there's like three or four of us. And Thomas Jefferson, he was a good guy too.
Who was that Kennedy guy?
Yeah, Dan, you know, you had talked about, I mean, this is something that I don't think you're going to stop at just this one benefit. I mean, you've talked in the past about being able to do something with these shows, concerts that benefit different causes in different areas, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Harry Chapin did, I think he did like 100 or 200 concerts a year. Harry Belafonte did that. I mean, it's just the list is really long of artists who devote whatever craft they have, any talent, to good causes. And I think, you know, it's something Red Skelton said. He said, if you have a talent, that's your gift from God. And he said, if you do something with that talent, that's your gift to God.
That's very right. Good. That's very true.
And I'm old enough to remember Red Skelton. There aren't a lot of people out there old enough to remember him, but I do.
I do too. It was really a good experience. And I think what we'd like to do is, now, why don't you give the audience, I mean, do you have your site ready to go for them to download this song?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can go directly. You can go to iTunes, and you'll find it on there. Just go online, punch in West Texas Millionaires, West Texas Town, and it's there. You can buy the download, and then whatever money comes from that, we'll send it to West Texas. So
great.
There's always an accounting. I'll know exactly, you know, how many downloads have happened and how much money came from it. So.
Well, what would be great is, like, I know you're going to do in a couple weeks kind of a big launch, right? Like, to, like, really try to get the radio stations out in Texas or wherever you think of to play your song and to get the audience to know about it. Because, you know, it was interesting. Now with Pandora, you know, you go on your iPhone and you hook up to an app and you punch in what you want to hear. Like, I want to hear, like, say, Chris Isaak. But I was talking to my son, and I had mentioned this to you. How do you find out the new songs or the new artists or the ones who are not being promoted by MTV or are a big label? And then we were talking about that is kind of a difficult challenge, right?
Oh, yeah, it is. You just have to stay out there. You have to do your work. Do your work and do your best to get it out to the public. You know, there's a lot of the world is changing all the time.
Well, that's for sure, and I feel like sometimes I'm like trying to catch up desperately to figure out what that change is. But what we'd like to do is, you know, when you do that big launch, when you're going to really go out there and I guess send your records to the different radio stations, then like to have you come back and just talk about it and see. I mean, I guess we have a pretty good audience, right, Michael?
Yeah, we have a pretty good audience.
We got picked up by, what was it, in Massachusetts?
Fall River Community Radio in Massachusetts, yeah. So yeah. We're now on a couple of internet radio stations. But, yeah, we'd love to have you back anytime. I have one more question for you. I know
absolutely,
I'm a true believer in casting my bread upon the water, and I believe in the end I usually get more than I give. So what do you think you're getting out of this experience? What is the band getting out of this?
You know, what they get is purpose of life, ultimately. I mean, it's certainly it'll work both ways. Like, if you get known for doing something, then you get known, and maybe you'll get to play better shows, or you'll get to play, you know, in better places, or people may feel closer to you or understand what you're trying to do. But it's very similar to what you said of how, you know, musicians have a calling, and they have to play, and they want to do good things. It goes back, and I'm sure forever, it's all part of community, you know, like George Harrison's concert for Bangladesh.
Yeah, absolutely.
Beatles, or after the Beatles. And it's just, you know, I mean, musicians are of the culture. You're not really tied into your culture if you're not doing something for it. I'm sure in tribal times, you know, anytime anything happened, they were there as part of it. So
we've
gotten
I'm
a bit
sure.
away from that when it only comes over the radio at you.
Well, you know, it always bothers me. I don't want to digress too much here, but it always bothers me that art and music programs are the first ones cut in our public schools because, you know, that's what we remember cultures by. Nobody talks about the economics of ancient Greece or,
that's true.
Or the, you know, they talk about the music, they talk about the art, they talk about the culture, and musicians are certainly some of the most important caretakers of our culture. So, and you know what? And I'll leave. You gave me a quote from Red Skelton. We just had a guy on the show a week or so ago from the ACLU who used to work with Dr. King, and he tells me all the time. He says to me that Martin Luther King told him to take care of all the small things and the big things would take care of themselves. So certainly your heart's in the right place and you're doing the right things, and I wish you every success.
Thank you, Senator. I hear that coming out of you also. So.
Well, we're trying. You know, I'm trying to keep Kathleen out of trouble. That's my
good luck.
Yeah,
with
that's
that
the whole purpose of this show.
That's my cross to bear in life.
Oh, you're so good.
You know.
Well, Dan, tell us.
All right, go ahead.
Dan, tell us how you can contribute by going, I guess, on the internet, and I think it's
if you just punch in the words West Texas Millionaire, you'll find us. But
okay,
if you go to www.westtexasmillionaires.com, you can go to the website. Or if you go to iTunes and just put in West Texas Millionaires and then the song West Texas Town, you'll get to the song.
Great. And oh, the other thing I forgot to mention is your bass player, Mark Pierce. His first gig was in West Texas, right?
Yeah, that was part of our motivation. Our bass player is from Cleburne, Texas, which is right down the road. And when he was a kid, the first real show he ever did was in West. So that kind of touched his heart there. So
yeah, I tell you, it's a really small world. It's a really small world. And
it is.
And again, I want to thank you too because I thought it was a great idea and it was really a lot of fun to work on. And it was really motivating too, and it was great to see people react so well to when that screen popped up and we had this great guy named Russell who was like the MC. He was just so full of life. It just kind of really made everyone, it was like that aha moment, you know, we go, oh wow, you know. So
yeah,
it
got
was
very
great.
Real very fast.
Very real, very fast. And I just want to thank you for letting me have the opportunity to work with you and thanks
thank
for
you,
coming
Kathleen.
On the show. And
it wouldn't have happened without you. So
thank you.
Thank you
very much. Thank you. See, Michael, I do good stuff.
I'm sure you're sending this man money under the table, Kathleen. I can't imagine. But thank you so much, Dan, for coming on. We're so happy that you're doing this kind of good stuff out there. We know that we'll have you back sometime, and maybe we can get a music project going. I think that would be great. There's so many good causes in this country, and there's so many good people like you out there trying to do good things. So thanks again for being on the show.
You're welcome. Just pick the one closest to your heart, and we'll do it.
Yeah. Okay. Good.
Okay, Dan. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathleen. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
We're going to take a short break, and this week's song, you'll never guess, is going to be West Texas Town by Dawn and the rest of the Millionaires. So
it's
have
Dan
a listen.
Momus and the West Texas Millionaires.
I'm sorry, Dan. Yes, thank you. Okay, folks, there it is, West Texas Town. Call in, download it, and help your fellow Americans rebuild. We're back. You've heard what we have to say. Now we'd like to hear what you have to say. So call us at toll free, 888-429-5471. America's talking and we're listening. That's 888-429-5471 or Skype us at BBS Radio 2.
Hey, you know, I forgot to give a shout out to West Texas. I talked with people in the Chamber of Commerce and there was a guy, Mike Utra, who basically loaned us his bar and grill, Out West. And Out West Bar and Grill in there in West Texas, really nice people. Just my heart goes to them, but they were so nice. And it's just great to work with nice people. You know, after working in D.C. and, you know, the kind of people sometimes you have to work with up there, it gives your faith, it gives you that sense of your faith back in Americans when you deal with small towns.
Well, you know, like I was saying before, we're the most generous people on the face of the planet. And I agree with you, you know, that I spend my life in this bubble here in Washington, D.C. But as you know, Kathleen, my brother is president of a small college in a small town in Ohio. And I go out there on a regular basis just to recharge my battery, to hear what people really have to think about America, to see what really people are the issues that people are concerned with out there. And you know, there's a lot of great people. I traveled and went to 48 states when I was 18 years old. I took $800 and my Ford Pinto,
God.
In many nights. And visited all 48 states. It took me like 4 months, but I got by on very little money because there were so many people out there that were so nice to me that were willing to take care of me because I was young and, you know, feed me and give me a place to sleep and show me where to go. And I recommend that to anybody, any young person out there. America is just an amazing country. I've traveled around the world, and I've never seen a country more beautiful than the United States. It's just that our beauty is spread out. You know?
Right. We're a big, big country. But I saw pictures of you when you were that age, and America must be really nice, because I don't know if I would have helped you.
Long hair.
Were you still a biker at that time or something?
Well, I don't know that I was a biker, but you know, I wasn't. I didn't look like the kids from Ozzy and Harriet either. But people reached out, and I'm not sure I ever looked like the kids from Ozzy and Harriet. But people reached out, and they were very generous, and I think basically Americans are that way. You know, I've always said on 9/11, I truly believe. If you look at what happened in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, where those people brought that plane down that was heading for Washington, I think that every one of those planes would have come down if the people on them had any idea what those guys were doing.
Yes.
You know, I think the planes that flew into those towers in New York City, the Twin Towers, I don't think the people on the planes had any idea that something like that was going to happen. None of us had an idea that something like that could happen. And if they did, I think they would have sacrificed themselves to save other people, because I think that's who Americans are.
That's right. And you know, we've kind of gotten really jaded in this time, because there's so many, it seems to be it's all about me, you know, it's all about myself, or I'm entitled. But I really still feel that there's that, you know, being in New York and it happened and seeing what Dan, Simonis, and the West Texas Millionaires did, and then, you know, seeing how people are responding to the firefighters who died and the Oklahoma tragedy, we really do help one another. And I have a lot of faith in America based on the kinds of people that I've met, because I do think we are really good people deep down. And, you know, I think D.C., like, one of the things I've always thought, in Arizona, they have a saying, you know, as Maricopa goes, so does go the state. And that's because Maricopa is made up of Phoenix. You have a lot of outsiders in Phoenix. You have all these politicians. They don't go out to rural areas and visit the people in Douglas or Bisbee. I mean, I think the only time I saw McCain and Kyle come to Douglas was when we had the national thing happen with, you know, the rancher who was killed, and it became this big news story. All of a sudden, there they were. They had never been here before. And it's a shame that it takes something like that to bring your representatives down to your little communities, because Arizona is made up of these rural communities. That's what makes it great, is the Tombstones, Bisbee's, you know, Prescott's, you know, Sholo, Pine Top, all these little communities outside of Phoenix is what makes Arizona known for being a beautiful state, a place to go. It's not Phoenix where it's like 100 and, I don't know, 28 degrees right now. You know, it's not Phoenix that makes Arizona, you know, known for a destination, a place to go to. So that's something I think these politicians really need. It may not be a lot of votes, but I think they'd understand what is important to the people, and they'd become better politicians for it.
Oh, absolutely. And one grievance that I have against the people of Arizona, you need to work on this, is that when I was in Arizona, it was summertime, and it was 115. And what did everybody say when you say it's 115?
It's dry heat.
It's dry heat.
It's a big difference.
It's dry heat, but it's still 115 degrees, whether it's dry or wet. So
yeah, but don't sweat it. If you go under shade, it'll be like maybe 100. If you're in a city, it never gets any cooler under a tree under shade. See, that's the difference.
You know me, I want to build a statue to the man that invented air conditioning, because I believe in it. But, you know, let's talk a little bit, Kathleen, about some of the things that we've talked about. Give people an update on a few things. One thing I'd like to talk about for a minute and get your feeling about is immigration, because it's a different. You know, we've had this discussion several times on the show, and it's a different thing here than it is in Arizona. We have a different attitude, I think, about immigration policy and things like border security, because they're not omnipresent like they are in a town like Douglas, where border security is got to be a major thing because you're on the border. But, you know, last week, what they're calling the Gang of Eight in the United States Senate passed an immigration reform bill, and now it's moving on to the House. And all the political pundits out there are saying that the chances that the Senate bill will pass in the House are slim. And part of the reason they're saying that is because the House is already complaining that border security isn't a big enough thing in the bill, which I can't imagine, because it seems to me that the bill really has a very strong border security provision to it. And there are several Republicans that have already come out and said that they don't want to see non-documented aliens get citizenship. So I don't know what we expect to do with these 11 million people.
Well, it's true. I mean, it is a big issue. You know, one of the things that I've heard that I didn't realize was that, okay, I'm over here, and with this bill, I get citizenship. There is no provision that deals with how many people I can bring over as part of my direct family. So I could bring over my wife, my children, my grandparents. I mean, that's an issue, because what has happened a lot, and I've seen it, I didn't believe it until I came, and I've lived in Douglas now for 6 years, is how many people abuse the system, whether it be healthcare, food stamps, and I know people get all up in arms, but I have a problem when people work here in the United States and live in Mexico. Okay, I understand it's a lot cheaper over there, you know, to live over there. But, I mean, they do pay taxes, but they come over here. And I think it makes a situation where they don't contribute to the community. They're not really part of the community over here. I have a lot of friends that did it the legal way. They waited 14 years, and right, they filed the papers. And they did it the way you're supposed to, and they're very angry. They say, why did I do that? Why didn't I just then, you know, become an undocumented worker over here, and why did I go through the pains of doing it the right way? Which is very valid, I think. You know, I don't know the answer to those people who did do it the right way. We need to go and turn around, and you kind of reward people who have been illegal for all these years. Part of the issue, you know, it's tough because I live on the border. I grew up on the border. My family is from Mexico. My grandfather was given amnesty over here, and I think it was like 1918. But, you know, I do see it kind of like it's different. My grandparents were so honored to be American citizens, yet now we have this thing where I would say that, I don't know, I'm going to get in a lot of trouble for saying this, but it's almost a way of abusing the system that we have over here, whether you come over and you have your babies born here because then they become American citizens. And I don't know if I lived in certain situations, if I was a poor in Mexico, I would want to get out of that to better my family. But, you know, our hospital, for instance, we have so many people that don't have insurance, and it was such a weight on this small rural hospital that it's looking at closing. So, you know, there's such tough issues that are it's not black and white. It's very gray.
Right.
For instance, you know, if I go to Mexico, I can't buy a house over there. I have to have somebody in partnership with me, and I can only own like 29% of it. It may have changed, but anywhere you go, whether it's Japan or Italy, it's even hard to open up a bank account if you're not a citizen of that country. Here, anybody can come open a bank account. Anybody can buy a house. What happens at Douglas is that because we don't have much of any other industry, people buy homes so that their kids can go to school over here. And the kid might just be here a couple of nights during the week, but they live in Mexico. A lot of students in our Prieta, a lot of children come over here for their education. Okay, that's great, but they're not paying into the system. Supposedly they do, they know about it, you're supposed to give money, but there's no real watchdog that sees it. So it bleeds the public schools. So you see, I mean, it's very intricate, it's very, very entwined, it's like a spider web, it's not black and white, everyone's impacted by it, and so it can't, what I object to these politicians in Washington is thinking that they could just figure it out in like 3 months, oh, we got the answers to it all. You know, they'll come down and they'll go to one area, like say the Gang of Eight came down here to Nogales. What I'd like to see if they take a ride from Douglas to, say, Columbus, New Mexico, where there's not a fence there. And I'm not sure I want a fence. I mean, I think with all the technology that there is between the different kinds of drones and all that, they can monitor the system without putting up these huge, ugly things. But right now what it is, you know, those rail X's that they used to have, like, in communist along the border of, like, say, Germany and stuff. But they don't go there. You know, they don't really they come for 2-3 hours, and they get back on their plane thinking they know everything and they have the answer. They don't. They're just touching the tip of the iceberg. So when we get to this discussion, it's going to be very, very heated because people are very passionate on both sides. You know, I kind of really look forward to it, and I also dread it because it is going to bring up a lot of things that are very painful to people. And
my big problem with all this is if we don't provide a pathway for the 11 million, if we don't figure out how to do that, then we're never going to resolve this problem. And we're only going to make the things that you talk about worse with the illegal activity. Look, we've got Taboo, who's a caller who calls in from time to time, on the line, and I'd like to talk to him for a minute, see what his question is.
And I just want to add one more thing about that.
Yeah.
I think that part of being a pathway to becoming a citizen, you have to speak the language. I know when I go into Mexico, I do not expect people to speak to me in English over there. I go to Walmart right here in Porter. I can't find anybody who speaks English.
It is our official language. I mean,
and it should. And everyone who is in this country should learn the language. Okay, Taboo, are you there, Taboo?
Yes, I am. Thanks to all of you. Can you all hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you fine. What's up?
Great. Well, you know, well, first I'd like to thank all of you, the West Texan millionaires and all of you. And I really wanted to comment about what you all were talking about, how Americans are, how giving we are.
Yep.
You know, I'm happy to hear people talk about good things sometimes, you know. Yep. But you know, I have a perplexing question relative to that. You know, America is probably the most liked country on the planet.
Yep.
But by the same token, it's probably the most disliked also. Now, that's very perplexing, isn't it?
Yes. Yes.
So that tells us something of. Yeah, so that tells us something about us. But I did also want to answer your question about what do you do with all the people who are here illegally?
Yep.
You know, first, remember, you will never be able to stop the flow. You will never be able to secure that border. You know, so what you have to do, you have to do it from the inside here. You merely enforce the law. As simple as that. Let's see, the executive branch of government is supposed to ensure that the laws are enforced, and that's not happening. It hasn't been. So that's the real problem. You know, we enforce the laws of our citizens.
Right.
No, I agree with you. There are a lot of laws that we don't enforce, and if we're not going to enforce them, then we should get them off the books.
I think it's wrong. If someone is neglected, they're neglecting their duty when they don't. It's their job to enforce the law. So really, they are should be held accountable for not doing their job. You know, so that's the real problem. The immigration system is not broken. It's the enforcement of the law is what's broken.
I think you've got two things going on there. I agree with you, Taboo, but also I think we have a broken system. We have a strange system that includes things like lotteries that choose people by chance, and you know, we have people who are American citizens who have their parents deported, and I mean it's a strange system that needs to be. That needs to be reformed. But I agree with you. I think we need to enforce laws, and we shouldn't make laws that aren't enforceable. If you can't enforce it, we shouldn't have it. But I want to ask you a question, Taboo, you know, because I know you're involved in the D.C. statehood movement like I am. This is an important week for us. We don't want to digress here, by the way, Kathleen. We'll get back to immigration policy soon enough. But, you know, we're about to have a hearing, Taboo, on Thursday, which I hope you will attend, in the Wilson Building to decide for the first time whether we are actually going to fund. Well, get paid and fund the movement. $1.1 million to help fund the movement. What do you think about that?
I'm all for it. That was one of the things I wanted to talk about. Thank you for announcing it. I will be there. And it is most needed. I think this should be highlighted. It should be on all news media. I don't know if it's possible to have a press conference to announce this, but here again, another perplexing thing. I'm very happy about it, but by the same token, it's very sad that this already isn't in place, you know?
That's right. Well, and when you talk about, you know, people's rights, here you are. You've been an American citizen. I'm American citizen. Both our ancestors probably go back a long way in America. We pay taxes. Many members of my family have served in the military, although I never have. And we know that thousands of Washingtonians have given their lives to protect our freedom. And, you know, it's a little ironic because on the 4th of July, there I was in the 4th of July parade, and I love being an American, and I'm proud to be an American, but it's a little ironic to be walking down the middle of the street with all this fanfare to celebrate rights that we don't have in this country. You know, it's just amazing to me that we're the only country in the world that does, you know, when you talk about things that are complicated and are, you know, hard to understand, you know, how is it that every country in the world has figured a way out of this mess except us?
And I think you have to tell people who might be new to our audience what you're talking about as far as your rights.
Yeah, let me do that. In the District of Columbia, you may or may not know that we have no voting members in either House of Congress. I have no vote. Our representatives in the House, our Representative Eleanor Holmes Norton has no vote. We do not have control over our own local tax money or our own local laws. Basically, Congress is in control of the District of Columbia, and it controls every aspect of the District of Columbia. Taboo, are you still there?
I'm still here, and I'm listening, and you're so accurate, Senator Brown.
What do we call Washington, D.C., Taboo? The last what?
The last plantation.
The last plantation. Because that's what it is.
That's right.
And
exactly.
So we need to change that. And we're going to try to change that this Thursday. So we're about to sign off, Taboo. Thanks for calling in again. And I'll see you on Thursday. I look forward to it. And thanks for always supporting our cause. We really appreciate it.
Michael.
Thank you. Looking forward to meeting you at some point, Kathleen.
Yes, very soon. Very soon, Taboo. Thank you.
Thank all of you all. Bye-bye.
Bye.
The one other thing that popped in my mind about border security and the thing that I think people forget is we're just not talking about illegal immigration by Mexico or Mexicans. Now what we're seeing is what they call OTMs, other than Mexicans. You're seeing they're catching people from India, Afghanistan, from Russia, from Pakistan, countries. You know, we have such a big border, and that's I believe what they're very adamant about border security is that we don't get any more of these, or we try to have some kind of control over the cells that are coming across here because the border is so big. I mean, all they have to do is walk, just go 2 miles east of Douglas, and you can get across, although there are drones, there are cameras, and it's a very desolate area. So that is the other issue about border security I didn't want the listeners to forget, is that we're seeing people other than Latin Americans coming to our border from countries that we have to question on why they're trying to come here.
Well, that's absolutely true. And I think if you and I, Kathleen, are going to start a dialogue with people, we're going to need to get people involved and figure out a way to reach an acceptable level. I know border security, for example, has tightened a lot. And, you know, it's hard to figure out what those acceptable levels are, but you're going to have to reach it somewhere. For example, we all drive automobiles, and we know that people are killed every year. Tens of thousands of people are killed in car accidents. A lot of them are killed because of alcohol. So we've done a lot to crack down on drunk drivers, and we've done a lot of things, but we also accept a certain amount of pedestrians being killed and other. So we're going to have to accept, I think, a certain amount of undocumented aliens, but I agree with you. We should do everything we can to make sure that people that come into this country come in legally, and that we're able to then provide a pathway to citizenship, but that, you know, you got to follow the rules. I think in addition to being great, very generous people, Americans are also great rules followers. I think we like to follow the rules. I think for the most part we do.
Well, it stops chaos. And I mean, I think that's why people want to come to the United States, because your streets are clean, because yes, there are laws that you don't litter and you throw out, you know, your garbage. There's rules that keep us from, it actually help us to live a better life, you know, and that's why we do need laws. I know that there's a lot of talk, oh, there's too much laws, state rights versus the federal government. And sometimes We have to have some common sense. And we have to realize, yes, we're going to have to need laws that are done by the federal government. And then we're going to have to let states actually be able to rule themselves a little bit more. But we're going to have an attitude where we come together to compromise. And just like we don't have a chance to talk about the student loan thing, that's another thing where Washington is not doing what they're supposed to. They never were able to reach an agreement. They're thinking, oh, we got to stop. There's a little time to August, and we'll do something then. No, dang it. Your jobs are to get the job done. And if you can't get the job done, then let's move over and let somebody else get elected who can. I mean, I'm getting, like, you know, off on my soapbox, but
I know.
That's how I feel.
Well, you know, one thing is that next week, we're about to sign off here, but next week I hope somebody will call in and help me knock Kathleen off her soapbox, because it needs to be done. We really do want to start a dialogue, and we want you out there to be part of this. And let me tell you, if you live in the Washington area and you're listening to me now, call 202-724-8032 this week and tell the chairman of the city council that you want to see us funded. You want to see the senators and representatives from the District of Columbia funded.
And that's my last word. Well, you know, I think maybe we should have a benefit concert to just maybe make people aware, because I don't think that people realize that the citizens of D.C. do not have a vote and really don't have any rights. They can't decide the future of their city. They don't have any power over their money that they pay. And what, you guys have one of the highest tax rates.
Yeah, the highest.
So Taxation without representation should not be accepted at this time.
That's right. Thomas Jefferson called it tyranny, and I agree. So we'll see you all next week when we'll have another exciting show. In the meantime, I'll try to talk some sense into Kathleen, and we hope that you'll call in and help me, because I've been trying for 35 years and it hadn't worked yet.
No, it's just getting worse. But I also want to shout out to all those Americans who are helping their neighbors and you know, giving, sacrificing, maybe not going out to dinner to give, you know, whatever that may be, to whatever cause is important to you. I think that the thing that makes us so great is that we care about each other, and let's keep on caring.
Yep. That's a great
idea. I care about you, Michael, and that takes a lot sometimes.
Uh-oh. She's about to borrow money from me. Okay. Thank you, folks. We'll see you next week.
Thank you, America. Nice.